Chapter 27. Along with his lovely prisoner, Hagenarmo sent a letter full of servile compliments and loathsome flatteries to King Padella, for whose life, and that of his royal family, the hypocritical humbug pretended to offer the most fulsome prayers. And Hagenarmo promised speedily to pay his humble homage at his august master's throne, of which he begged leave to be counted the most loyal and constant defender. Such a wary old bird as King Padella was not to be caught by Master Hagenarmo's chaff, and we shall hear presently how the tyrant treated his upstart vassal. No, no, depend on't, two such rogues do not trust one another. So this poor queen was laid in the straw like Marjorie Daw, and driven along in the dark ever so many miles to the court, where King Padella had now arrived, having vanquished all his enemies, murdered most of them, and brought some of the richest into captivity with him for the purpose of torturing them, and finding out where they had hidden their money. Rosalba heard their shrieks and groans in the dungeon in which she was thrust. A most awful black hole, full of bats, rats, mice, toads, frogs, mosquitoes, bugs, fleas, serpents, and every kind of horror. No light was let into it, otherwise the gallers might have seen her, and fallen in love with her, as an owl that lived up in the roof of the tower did, and a cat, you know, who can see in the dark, and having set its green eyes on Rosalba, never would be got to go back to the turnkey's wife to whom it belonged. And the toads in the dungeon came and kissed her feet, and the vipers wound round her neck and arms, and never hurt her, so charming was this poor princess in the midst of her misfortunes. At last, after as he had been kept in this place ever so long, the door of the dungeon opened, and the terrible King Padella came in. But what he said and did must be reserved for another chapter, as we must now back to Prince Giglio. Ziv. What became of Giglio? The idea of marrying such an old creature as Gruffano frightened Prince Giglio so that he ran up to his room, packed his trunks, fetched in a couple of porters, and was off to the diligence office in a twinkling. It was well that he was so quick in his operations, did not dawdle over his luggage, and took the early coach. For as soon as the mistake about Prince Bulbo was found out, that cruel Glomboso sent up a couple of policemen to Prince Giglio's room, with orders that he should be carried to Newgate, and his head taken off before 12 o'clock. But the coach was out of the Paphlagonian dominions before 2 o'clock, and I dare say the express that was sent after Prince Giglio did not ride very quick, for many people in Paphlagonia had a regard for Giglio, as the son of their old sovereign, a prince who, with all his weaknesses, was very much better than his brother, the usurping, lazy, careless, passionate, tyrannical, reigning monarch. That prince busied himself with the balls, fetes, masquerades, hunting parties, and so forth, which he thought proper to give on occasion of his daughter's marriage to Prince Bulbo, and let us trust, was not sorry in his own heart that his brother's son had escaped the scaffold. It was very cold weather, and the snow was on the ground, and Giglio, who gave his name as simple Mr. Giles, was very glad to get a comfortable place in the coupe of the diligence, where he sat with the conductor and another gentleman. At the first stage from Blombodinga, as they stopped to change horses, there came up to the diligence a very ordinary, vulgar-looking woman, with a bag under her arm, who asked for a place. All the inside places were taken, and the young woman was informed that if she wished to travel, she must go upon the roof, and the passenger inside with Giglio, a rude person, I should think, put his head out of the window, and said, "Nice weather for traveling outside. I wish you a pleasant journey, my dear." The poor woman coughed very much, and Giglio pitied her. "Will give up my place to her," says he, "rather than she should travel in the cold air with that horrid cough." On which the vulgar traveler said, "You'd keep her warm, I am sure, if it's a muff she wants." On which Giglio pulled his nose, boxed his ears, hit him in the eye, and gave this vulgar person a warning never to call him muff again. Then he sprang up gaily onto the roof of the diligence, and made himself very comfortable in the straw. The vulgar traveler got down only at the next station, and Giglio took his place again, and talked to the person next to him. She appeared to be a most agreeable, well-informed, and entertaining female. They traveled together till night, and she gave Giglio all sorts of things out of the bag which she carried, and which indeed seemed to contain the most wonderful collection of articles. He was thirsty. Out there came a pint bottle of Bass's pale ale, and a silver mug. Hungry, she took out a cold fowl, some slices of ham, bread, salt, and a most delicious piece of cold plum pudding, and a little glass of brandy afterwards. As they traveled, this plain-looking, queer woman talked to Giglio on a variety of subjects, in which the poor prince showed his ignorance as much as she did her capacity. He owned, with many blushes, how ignorant he was, on which the lady said, "My dear Giggle, my good Mr. Giles, you are a young man, and have plenty of time before you. You have nothing to do but to improve yourself. Who knows but that you may find use for your knowledge someday, when you may be wanted at home, as some people may be." "Good heavens, madam," says he, "do you know me?" "I know a number of funny things," says the lady. "Have been at some people's christenings, and turned away from other folks' doors. I have seen some people spoilt by good fortune, and others, as I hope, improved by hardship. I advise you to stay at the town, where the coach stops for the night. Stay there and study, and remember your old friend to whom you were kind." "And who is my old friend?" asked Giglio. "When you want anything," says the lady, "look in this bag, which I leave to you as a present, and be grateful to whom, madam?" says he. "To the fairy Blackstick," says the lady, flying out of the window. And then Giglio asked the conductor if he knew where the lady was. "What lady?" says the man. "There has been no lady in this coach, except the old woman, who got out at the last stage." And Giglio thought he had been dreaming. But there was the bag which Blackstick had given him lying on his lap, and when he came to the town he took it in his hand, and went into the inn. They gave him a very bad bedroom, and Giglio, when he woke in the morning, fancying himself in the royal palace at home, called, "John, Charles, Thomas, my chocolate, my dressing gown, my slippers." But nobody came. There was no bell, so he went and bawled out for water on the top of the stairs. The landlady came up, looking like this, "What are you a-hollering, and a-billering for here, young man?" says she. "There's no warm water, no servants. My boots are not even cleaned." He. "Clean 'em yourself," says the landlady. "Oo, young students, give yourselves pretty airs. I never heard such impudence." "I'll quit the house this instant," says Giglio. "The sooner the better, young man. Pay your bill and be off. All my rooms is wanted for gentle folks, and not for such as you." "You may well keep the bear in," said Giglio. "Why, you should have yourself painted as the sign." The landlady of the bear went away growling, and Giglio returned to his room, where the first thing he saw was the fairy bag lying on the table, which seemed to give a little hop as he came in. "Hope it has some breakfast in it," says Giglio, "for I have only a very little money left." But on opening the bag, what do you think was there? A blacking brush and a pot of Warren's Jet, and on the pot was written, "Oor young men, their boots must black. Use me and cork me, and put me back." So Giglio laughed, and blacked his boots, and put back the brush and the bottle into the bag. When he had done dressing himself, the bag gave another little hop, and he went to it, and took out, 1. A tablecloth and a napkin. 2. A sugar basin full of the best loaf sugar. 4. 6. 8. 10. 2 forks, 2 teaspoons, 2 knives, and a pair of sugar tongs, and a butter knife all marked G11-12-13. A teacup, saucer, and slop basin. 14. A jug full of delicious cream. 15. A canister with black tea and green. 16. A large tea urn and boiling water. 17. A saucepan, containing 3 eggs nicely done. 18. A quarter of a pound of best-dipping butter. 19. A brown loaf. And if he hadn't enough now for a good breakfast, I should like to know who ever had one? Giglio, having had his breakfast, popped all the things back into the bag, and went out looking for lodgings. I forgot to say that this celebrated university town was called Bisforo. He took a modest lodging opposite the schools, paid his bill at the inn, and went to his apartment with his trunk, carpet bag, and not forgetting, we may be sure, his other bag. When he opened his trunk, which the day before he had filled with his best clothes, he found it contained only books. And in the first of them which he opened there was written, clothes for the back, books for the head. Read, and remember them when they are read. And in his bag, when Giglio looked in it, he found a student's cap and gown, a writing book full of paper, an inkstand, pens, and a Johnson's dictionary, which was very useful to him, as his spelling had been sadly neglected. So he sat down and worked away, very, very hard for a whole year, during which Mr. Giles was quite an example to all the students in the University of Bisforo. He never got into any riots or disturbances. The professors all spoke well of him, and the students liked him too, so that, when at examination, he took all the prizes, viz. The spelling prize, the French prize, the writing prize, the arithmetic prize, the history prize, the Latin prize, the catechism prize, the good conduct prize. All his fellow students said, hurrah! Hooray for Giles! Giles is the boy the students joy! Hooray for Giles! And he brought quite a quantity of medals, crowns, books, and tokens of distinction home to his lodgings. One day after the examinations, as he was diverting himself at a coffee house with two friends, did I tell you that in his bag, every Saturday night, he found just enough to pay his bills, with a guinea over, for pocket money? Didn't I tell you? Well, he did, as sure as 20 makes 45, he chanced to look in the Bisforo Chronicle, and read off, quite easily, for he could spell, read, and write the longest words now, the following. Romantic circumstance. One of the most extraordinary adventures that we have ever heard has set the neighboring country of Crim Tartary in a state of great excitement. It will be remembered that when the present revered sovereign of Crim Tartary, His Majesty King Padella, took possession of the throne, after having vanquished, in the terrific battle of Blunderbusco, the late King Cavalfier, that prince's only child, the Princess Rosalba, was not found in the royal palace, of which King Padella took possession, and, it was said, had strayed into the forest, being abandoned by all her attendants, whereas he had been eaten up by those ferocious lions, the last pair of which were captured some time since, and brought to the tower, after killing several hundred persons. His Majesty King Padella, who has the kindest heart in the world, was grieved at the accident which had occurred to the harmless little princess, for whom His Majesty's known benevolence would certainly have provided a fitting establishment. But her death seemed to be certain. The mangled remains of a cloak, and a little shoe, were found in the forest, during a hunting party, in which the intrepid sovereign of Crim Tartary slew two of the lion's cubs with his own spear. And these interesting relics of an innocent little creature were carried home and kept by their finder, the Baron Spinacci, formerly an officer in Cavalfier's household. The Baron was disgraced in consequence of his known legitimist opinions, and has lived for some time in the humble capacity of a woodcutter, in a forest on the outskirts of the kingdom of Crim Tartary. Last Tuesday week Baron Spinacci and a number of gentlemen, attached to the former dynasty, appeared in arms, crying, God save Rosalba, the first queen of Crim Tartary! And surrounding a lady whom report describes as odiful exceedingly. Her history may be authentic, is certainly most romantic. The personage calling herself Rosalba states that she was brought out of the forest 15 years since by a lady in a car drawn by dragons. This account is certainly improbable, that she was left in the palace garden of Blombodinga, where Her Royal Highness the Princess Angelica, now married to His Royal Highness Bobo, Crown Prince of Crim Tartary, found the child, and, with that elegant benevolence which has always distinguished the heiress of the throne of Paphlagonia, gave the little outcast a shelter and a home. Her parentage not being known, and her garb very humble, the foundling was educated in the palace in a menial capacity, under the name of Betsinda. She did not give satisfaction, and was dismissed, carrying with her, certainly, part of a mantle and a shoe, which as he had on when first found. According to her statement, she quitted Blombodinga about a year ago, since which time as he has been with the Spinacci family. On the very same morning the Prince Giglio, nephew to the King of Paphlagonia, a young prince whose character for talent and order were, to say truth, none of the highest, also quitted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.